Hi, my name is Amy.
And my name is James.
And this is How I Learned to Love Shrimp, a podcast about promising ways to help animals and build the animal advocacy movement.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be part of a political party for animals? Well, then we have just the guest for you. Ines Kostic is a member of Regional Parliament in the Netherlands for the Dutch Party for the Animals and also a manager of the Animal Politics Foundation. In this episode, we speak to her about the opportunities and challenges around advocating for animals within the political system, the impact the Dutch Party for Animals has had, as well as what kind of people could be a good fit for politics. Also, somehow, this podcast has now been going for over 6 months, even though it feels like we started just yesterday. And we want to thank all of you for listening and supporting us, and especially to those who have given us feedback and positive encouragement. We really appreciate it. Sometimes we have no idea who, if anyone, is listening. So thanks to everyone sending the odd note about enjoying an episode or telling us in person. That really means a lot to us. But we're not done yet. We want to keep improving the show. And we want to make it as useful and as enjoyable as possible for all of you. And as such, we've got a feedback form, of course, which we've linked at the top of the show notes for this episode. And we'd really love for all of you to fill it out. It should take just a few minutes and it would really help us improve and produce even better content. But without further ado, here is the episode. We're joined today by Ines Kostic, who's a member of the Regional Parliament in the Netherlands for the Dutch political party, Party for the Animals, and a manager of the Animal Politics Foundation. Welcome, Ines.
Hi, good to see you all.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Can you tell us about your journey into politics? How did you end up as the Member of Parliament and the chairperson for the Regional Party for Animals?
Yeah, that's quite an interesting story. I was a refugee from Bosnia. When I was 10 years old, I fled the country of Bosnia and Herzegovina in Eastern Europe because of war there with my parents. And I don't know, I was always brought up with the idea that eating animals is normal. Obviously, like most of people, it was a big part of the food culture in Yugoslavia, former Yugoslavia. Bosnia was part of that. So I never really questioned that at all. And then later on in my life, I met somebody and we had a really good conversation about politics. And after that conversation, he told me that he was a board member, national board member of the Party for the Animals. And I kind of was surprised, like, you're such a smart guy. Why would you be a member of such a crazy party? Yeah, I mean, obviously people, when they hear Party for the Animals, the name itself is shocking for people.
Yeah,
makes them laugh. A lot of times, well, at least in back in the days. And the strange thing was that I was always interested in politics. My study was also about politics. So it was weird to me that I said, like, why would you be in a party for the animals? Then he just said to me, like, Ines, just read their party program and we will talk about it again. And then, like, something triggered me, like, oh my God, the hypocrisy that I felt, like being a hypocrite myself, because I always thought if you are able to read a program in a way, then you should do that before you go and choose a party which you're going to vote on. And I never actually took the time to read the Party for the Animals program, like many didn't. So I thought, like, oh, that was what a hypocrite I was. So I should at least read their program. And then I read it. And then it was such a broad, strong vision on a lot of things. And then really made sense how they worked animals into that as being part of the ecosystem on which we all rely on and are interconnected. But parallel to that was that my girlfriend really wanted cats, to adopt them, cats to save them from the shelter. And I also never had anything with pets, animal companions, so I really wasn't open to it. But anyways, I wanted to show her that I loved her, so I wanted to show her that, you know, let's try two cats from a shelter. The idea was to try them for 2 weeks because it was a possibility with the shelter and see if it clicks. And I thought, yeah, we'll never click. But within those 2 weeks, you know how cats are. They just win over your heart and even mine cold heart. So they basically won me over. And when they won me over, I start thinking like, okay, so I really want the best for these cats. I would never kill them. I would never touch them. I will never put them in a cage. It's, you know, I want the best for these cats, these animals. And I recognize they are individuals. I could see it now, right? When I see them up close, they are different. So then I started thinking, so why don't I want the same for all these other animals, which I only see on my plate? That was a philosophical question without having any more emotions about it. Just like, is this a rational thing that I'm doing right at the moment? Like, and then I thought, no, it's totally not rational what I'm doing. It's I don't need to eat animals or drink animal milk for my well-being. So why should I then keep doing it? So then I started to try with my girlfriend at least the vegetarian step first. The vegetarian step really went really quickly. So I kept that for, let's say, 4 years. And then after that, we also quickly went vegan. So that kind of naturally came, but it came parallel with me opening my eyes for the party. And the cats really helped with that because, they really opened up my eyes about how we treat animals and, about what's, if I'm actually being rational or not. So the cats made sure that I am where I am. So after that, it grew quickly because apparently I had talent. So for politics the party, used that. And since then, I've been working.
Cooped you up.
Yeah. So I worked as a volunteer first, but quickly I had a policy supporter role within the party, and then I got elected in 2019 for the first time for the regional parliament. And now in this year, 2023, I got elected again. We are growing all the time. So that's a good thing.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Nice. Thanks.
Yeah. And what made you actually want to run for parliament? Because I guess it's one thing to be doing policy work for the party, but to actually be an elected member, that feels like a bit of a bigger leap of faith in what way? And how did you come to that decision and what were you thinking about?
Yeah, that's a good question. And yeah, if you are an elected, then you are also like the poster child of the party in a sense. People, you're a spokesperson on whatever level. I guess I was always also very active on social media and I just saw that people responded well to the way I talk and translate the message of the party. And I was able to motivate people as well to do their own part in making this world a better place. So that kind of, you know, let me know that I guess people were willing to support me and were trusting politics I was doing it. So that's why I decided that this was something I could at least try. The first 4 years when I was elected, it went really well. I managed with our team, of course. It's always teamwork. Never forget about that. With our team, we really managed to put the regional the party on a regional level, at least in the picture. And we really managed to change a lot of things. So yeah, feels good.
Nice.
Yeah, that's great. And so you were, I'm assuming, I'd like to know how long the party's been around and how much you were talking about momentum over the last 5 years. How's that kind of shifted? How, in terms of maybe even in numerically, how many votes you would tend to get versus how the last 4 years went? And then you've obviously been re-elected now in 2023. What does that kind of trajectory look like?
So we exist since 2002. Then that's when we got when we started. And the first time we got into parliament was in 2006. So that's when we got our first seats. It was already national parliament. So after 4 years, it's really quick. And to be honest, that has to do also with our electoral system. I'm sure you know your own electoral system, which is pretty difficult to get through if you're a smaller party. So that the electoral system worked well for us. It's easier to get seats if you have a good story or, you know, if you're a smaller party. But then the challenge is to keep those seats and keep growing and keep professionalizing. And I think that's something that the party has done really, really well. Because when you look at the election results, we have consistently been growing. It's a slow growth. We call it, like organic growth. Like you have organic vegetables, they grow a bit less fast than others. But we grow and it's a healthy growth. That way you can take the time to really make sure you have a good team on every level. You don't get too much drama because, you know, eventually we all work with people, so you always get drama, but you want to minimize the chances. So that kind of was going up and up. So in 2006, we got 2 seats in the national parliament. By now, we have 6. And in the polls for the next election, which will be in November, because our government just broke down in November.
6 out of how many, just for context?
150. But we have a lot of parties here. So we are, let's say, a middle party when it comes to the amount of seats. We have more seats than one of the ruling parties at the moment. So we have become a middle party when it comes to the amount of seats, and we are pulling towards 10 seats in November, but we'll see. Those are just polls, right? We don't know, but we expect to grow again. And how much, the only question is how much we will grow again. So that's really good to see, and we see that on every level of government. So that's really exciting. I guess that the new thing is since 2022 is that we are also governing in municipalities. We are part of governments in municipalities, in the coalitions. So that's a new role for us, because for all these years, we've been in, let's say, the opposition. And that's obviously, it's not easy, but it's an easier place to, you know, be this pacer in a marathon, setting the goal. Look, guys, we have to go there because science, because this, that. And then never letting that goal out of sight, and really by doing that changing the debate and making the rest run faster for animal rights, our environment and nature. And that's a very, very important role that we play in politics. But then the question was, what happens to that role once we get into governmental positions, so really as a ruling party in different levels? And that's very interesting to see. And obviously, we try that, and it's really going well. That's because we thought about when it's the right time to step into a coalition. And the right time is when you have the opportunity to make a green agreement in which you can really do what you promised to do to your electorate, to really take care of nature, to really take care of animal rights, and with that as well, humans. And we really managed to do that well. And when some months ago, a big national newspaper was interested in this, you know, growth that we've been through and our new role as, you know, part of governments in municipalities. So they started like following us and interviewing not only us, but also other parties. And our electorate about the question, okay, what do you think that the party has accomplished now being in a governmental position? And even our worst enemies say like, okay, we might not agree with what the Party for the Animals wants and does, but hey, are really successful in what they have done. And so it's really good to hear that. And we hope to keep that up because it's not easy. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely.
Very cool.
And in terms of the policies that you do promote, so I guess you could be, people could be under the impression that, and I'm sure even people in the region feel as though it's very kind of animal focused and animal centric, and you're missing out that kind of human side. But of course, in terms of your policies being really strong on climate and human rights issues as well, mm-hmm. What would you say are your kind of just top line policies that as a party you're really keen to promote?
Okay, I'll try to. We have a party program which we have translated to English as well, which is maybe good to read for your listeners. Yeah, it's an electoral program for 2021, but you can get an idea of the broad policies that we promote. But I guess the fundamental thing is that we keep in mind that we are part of this ecosystem. And so we are all dependent on the nature and animals, and you know, it's all interdependent. And from that, we make policies about economics and about climate and whatever not. Our leading values are compassion, sustainability, personal freedom, and personal responsibility. So that also kind of helps us make decisions. But when it comes to really issues that we focus on, I guess it would be fighting the climate and biodiversity crisis at the same time. So making sure that when we fight the climate crisis, it doesn't worsen the biodiversity crisis. That's not something that we thought of. It's the IPCC and IPBES, the UN climate and biodiversity tops scientists that have, you know, recommended this, and they see the danger of us that now we have discovered this solutions for climate change, maybe that everybody's focusing on solutions which are maybe damaging the biodiversity. And what they are saying very clearly, you will not solve any of the crises if you forget that they are interconnected, and if you, you know, make sure that the other crisis is worsened, then you will solve none. So one of the basic biggest issues is this climate and biodiversity crisis. Obviously, I guess I don't have to explain how that impacts on animals. Animals, as one of the, you know, most vulnerable beings in this system, are the ones who are struck the first, and then the vulnerable people, and so on and so on. So really try to connect those. And then next to that, the animal rights. So we are, our goal is animal rights. Our goal is to free animals, non-human animals, from the food chain. But we also combine it with animal welfare-ish steps, because you take whatever you get. And I know this discussion is always going on. If you take whatever you get, maybe in the long run, you will,
you
maybe
normalize it or something.
Yeah, or you will make the change slower. There are philosophies about that. And I have to say, I just look at the practice, and I see what we can do for the animals. And every step we can do, every chance we get, we take the chance. We make sure we do earn the max for the animals, and never forget that eventually we want to free animals from the food system. And that's one of the biggest problems when it comes to animal welfare and their lives.
Mm. Maybe if you can talk about the general, like, intermediate steps, those kind of welfare policies that you do ask for.
Yeah, so we just had a big breakthrough when it comes to law. And we have an animal welfare law, and we managed to amend that law in a way that would mean that, you know how it goes in the farming industry, the animals are adjusted to the system, right? So they are manipulated so they can fit into these stalls, and there's a lot of manipulation of the animals so they can grow faster and give more milk, blah 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 blah. So what we did with this amendment is turn it around. We said, no, the system has to, you know, change, fit the natural needs and behavior of animals, and then it can function. It should be a must, and not the other way around. And that has a lot of implications. A lot of implications that most of the parliamentarians who voted for our amendments didn't quite realize at the moment. But after that, the livestock industry woke up and they panicked and they started a big, huge lobby against this amendment, although it was already accepted. But their spin was, and this is what they do, right? So they said, like, okay, and the Party for Animals has done an amendment in the law, which makes it which obliges people to give animals space to act on their natural behavior. So that means that nobody can have dogs anymore or cats. So they kind of focused on companion animals, interpreting the amendment in a way that's absurd and didn't fit the actual attention of the amendment. But using that to scare people, because, you know, a lot of people care about animals, but then it's usually companion animals, right? And then if you say to people, you cannot have your companion animals, obviously they'll be angry. So they kind of twist that around. But it's an example of what we managed to do, and which didn't mean immediately freedom for animals, but it was an important step towards that freedom, I think, and at least making the broader public think about what we do to animals and how the system now works, right? So it's also about everything we do. It's always also about, you know, changing that paradigm shift, right?
Yeah, of course. And is it the case when there is such a big opposition or a heavy opposition coming in from the farming community? Is it a case from your side that kind of any press is good press? I know sometimes even just them coming out with this great opposition actually just gives you a platform to refute some claims or to widen the knowledge about your party and generally allow more members of the public to learn more about what the work that you do.
Yeah, of course. It always, every media attention is good media attention in a way. you know, it does keep the debate going, but it's also very dangerous because the industry has a lot of more money to bring their points across, even not even through the media. It's on from through television advertising. It's through social media advertising. And that eventually can have impact on policymakers, and that's very dangerous. So for us, it's a constant struggle to see how we can use the limited capacity that we have, because we don't have that amount of money, to still reach out to people and make sure that they at least have the full information, right? So that's one of our biggest points. Yeah. People don't know, they are really not fully conscious of what is happening, and we believe that if we confront people with all the information on different parts in their lives, so in the supermarket, on the labels, in the advertising, on social media, in the newspapers, I believe that a lot of people will make a different decision as well.
And moving on slightly to Dutch Party for Animals more broadly, I think we're quite keen to hear more about basically how it's been so successful, because I think, to my knowledge, I think it's the only quite animal-focused political party in the world that has elected national members of parliament, which is amazing. And I think you mentioned one reason for that, which might be the Dutch political system, which is slightly more based on proportional representation. Do you think that's by far the main factor, or do you think there's some other reasons why are attitudes different in the Netherlands? Have you guys just done really well? Or we'd love to hear more about your successes.
Yeah. I can also give you a link, which you can put in here, that we've done a small research on possible explanations of the I guess, politics movement in general, and you know, also the problems that some parties face in their country, but also where there are opportunities. Well, you have to be honest that the electoral system is an important part of the whole success, but it isn't the most important part, because there is a lot to do and to keep up and to arrange when it comes to running a political party. So all these things have to come together, and you really have to invest time and energy into getting those things right. So that's what we do, and try to share that knowledge that we have, our experience, with others, in the hope that they can, you know, use that to make their party in their own country successful. For example, PAN, that's a Portuguese party, People, Animals, Nature. They have seats in national parliament as well, and they have a little bit more of an. They also have a proportional representation, but their thresholds is higher, so they have a bit more difficult electoral system than we do. Not as difficult as in the UK, but it's a bit more difficult, and still they manage. And that also has a lot of you can theorize about explanations for that. In any case, I think that the reason that we got so successful in the Netherlands is that we managed to show that we have a really well written out and thought out vision of our of what a society should look like. And that is always based on science, when that's relevant, right? Because yes, you can base a lot of science on science, but some questions are really about morality, right? For example, you can say a lot of things about the impact of animal milk on our environment, right? On our health. You can say all that, you can use science for. But the pure fundamental question, like, is a taste of animal milk worth all these, you know, small cows, baby cows, male cows being treated as trash because they have no worth for the milk industry. Is that something that we want to support? Obviously, a scientific answer to that, I don't know. I don't think that's there is a scientific answer to that, but it's a moral question. And yeah. So those two, combining moral questions and science, we've been really strong in that. I guess our vision, since we exist a bit more than 20 years, hasn't changed a lot. I mean, on topics, we gain more knowledge and the science is being updated as well. So we use that. But the broader vision as being part of the ecosystem hasn't. And people appreciate that. People appreciate that we don't, with every elections, you know, try to think of a new story like, oh, how can we gain the votes. We are not about gaining votes. We are about making a positive change for animals and our planet. And people trust us.
I love that that was also the thing that convinced you, right, in those early days, that it was just this core message, that core information. And it's great that you're still championing that original focus and those original goals now as the leader of the party. It seems like that has obviously been a very solid grounding that doesn't need that continuous change and amendments to kind of please whatever's happening, you know, culturally at the time. It's standing the test of time, which is testament to how it was written in the first place. And so you have around 25,000 members, is that right?
Right, you saw the bill.
Wow, yeah. That's great. And has that increased as the kind of popularity of the party has in those last sort of 4 years as well? Or was there quite a lot to begin with from that groundwork of originally launching? How's the membership looked over the last few years?
Yeah, I guess during the first elections when we gained the national seats, we had about 12,000 members, and so now we have indeed about 25,000. So that's grown also gradually. It's good to know, maybe it's in the UK it's the same, but less and less people want to join a political party, want to become a member. And it's a big step, because you know, why make myself a member of one party. It's just, it's so like, it becomes part of sort of somehow part of your identity or something. Sure. And a lot of people don't want to get into that. I guess I can say that it's already really big that our members keep growing, because that's definitely not the same for other parties. A lot of other parties are losing members. And when it comes to the amount of members, we actually have more members than the biggest party of the Netherlands, the Liberal Party. So that's really interesting to, obviously they have more votes.
Why do you think that is? Yeah.
I don't know. It's a good, I wish I had time to to research that. It's a good question for scientists. For scientists, I hope they. I guess that it has something to do with that, the fundamental way that we do politics, that we are totally doing it in a different way than the others have, not focused on power, but really making that change and staying close to your values and your vision. And people recognize themselves in that and are then maybe more proud or maybe more inclined to actually taking that step to become a member. Because becoming a member, it doesn't cost a lot, but when you become a member, we also get a lot of more subsidies from the government for our party. So the membership fee that people pay becomes a big, big plus for us as well. So people know that and they want us to have that, I guess.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the kind of impacts that the Dutch Party for Animals has had on Dutch government policy around animals, maybe particularly farm animals, what kind of successes have you had? You mentioned the one on genetics and having access to kind of animals' natural abilities. Is there anything else you're pretty excited about that you've helped to achieve in the last few years?
Yeah. So I guess the focus on eating animals and animal protein or whatever has been for a long time recognized or saw in the politics as a normal thing to do. There were no alternatives. And right now, obviously always working together with citizens and organizations within a society, that has shifted in policy making in the Netherlands, with the government actually focusing on the transition to more plant-based as well to help that happen. I think that we played an important role in that. When it comes to fur farming, we've been pushing to abolish that, obviously, all for years. And we grabbed the momentum when Corona came, because as you might know, fur farming, like a lot of industrial farming, is a danger to public health as well. And through our parliament work, through our pushing in the right moment, we managed to abolish fur farming in the Netherlands during Corona time and forever. So I just saw a news message from Finland that there has been an outbreak of a virus there in their fur farming industry. So I'm really glad I can point out that there were, you know, you see, this is what we have prevented here in the Netherlands, and we hope to accomplish the same in Finland as we did in the Netherlands, of course. Yeah, so those are a couple of, but there are so many things. We have a success page. It's in Dutch, unfortunately. But there's a whole bunch of stuff from small to bigger that we managed to succeed on. Yeah.
Do you feel like you're also getting other political parties to be more animal friendly? It's like, to what degree do you view your work as changing government policy or changing public opinion, or actually trying to change other political parties to be animal focused or animal friendly?
That's a really good question. Actually, that's one of the reasons why we were founded. We saw that other parties, when they were asked about, we think animal welfare is important, but then they do nothing about it. since we've been, even our the founding of our party, just that we came into the race, suddenly had as a result that other parties suddenly put people higher on the on their own lists, people who are more into animal welfare, to be able to say, look, to their own possible electorate, look, but the Party for the Animals is not needed. We have our people on the list who are also about animal welfare. So, you know, you can vote for us and it's going to be okay. But we totally exposed that. But it's interesting to see that just by starting a Party for the Animals, things are already changing in the political arena. People, other parties are trying to make sure that their electorate doesn't go away. So they try to, you know, at least on paper, say more about animal welfare. So that was in the beginning. And now it's not only on paper. Other parties are actually, you know, doing more on animal welfare, at least. And you have to have that because eventually politics is about majorities. So having majorities support your proposal. So if the other parties don't go along with us, then, well, we'll have to do more work to get them on our side. So yeah, of course we did influence other parties, and I know in my regional parliament that other parties are suddenly starting to talk about human and non-human animals, just because I have been consistently talking about this in my contributions in the parliament. Yeah, so it's very interesting to see.
That's so interesting that kind of as a tactic, even just your very presence has kind of forced them to have a position on many animal welfare topics and use more kind of progressive language around how we talk about animals and the use of them. That's really interesting. You know, even if you had less members and traction than you have, which is obviously adding to that success, even just the fact that you exist is obviously adding some momentum to the case as well.
Yes.
And so generally other political parties are just, you know, they have to listen, right? They have to sit up and assess you as a serious party. And how's that kind of affected the credibility of the party?
Yeah, it's we have become a major player in the political arena because of our credibility is big. And simply because we always make sure we have our facts straight, really do our research work. We base everything on science as far as possible, and keep that up. And then what you see is that they can attack you, but they will never win because all the facts are on our side. and that has been in the last year, that's been becoming clearer and clearer towards the public. Also because the media has picked up on this, and I think one of the biggest example of that is. When corona crisis came, obviously corona, zoonotic disease, pandemic, big consequences. The Party for the Animals has been warning for such a pandemic, possible pandemic, for years, connecting it to the way we treat nature and animals, right? And back in the days, 2006, the ministry, everybody that thought they were anything were like, what the hell are you talking about, Party for the Animals? What, so not a disease, what's that? How does that even impact? What does that have to do with the animal farming, blah, blah. But now when corona came, the big newspapers, news media on television, national television, started inviting us. And basically they said, okay, Party for the Animals, you were right all along. They show like old clips when we were, you know, warning for this issue in parliament.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And they were like, all right, how do you feel about being right?
Pretty good. Well, not great considering the reality, but but in terms of the political space, I feel very jealous of a country that can have a party that prides itself on credibility and the truth and facts and a really solid mission statement to ground yourselves in. I feel like it shouldn't be surprising, but it does feel kind of unique in that sense.
Yeah, you said it well. And let me say this, it's not impossible in other countries. We are working on other countries as well. And you all, every listener that's listening to this podcast can contribute to that. I mean, it's not easy, and especially not in the UK. But you have people there as well. You have the Animal Welfare Party, and they deserve your support. And if you have your time to contribute to the party growing, with your capacities, do that, because they have a tough time because of your electoral system. But they have the same kind of mission, the same kind of thinking when it comes to doing politics. And yeah, we need more of those politicians.
Mm. Very cool. And probably, like, at least the biggest change that someone from the outside looking in to Dutch politics has been the rise of the Farmers Party, and how they've gone from basically not existing to having a pretty significant portion of votes. And yeah, kind of how has that affected your work? Because in a way, that's kind of in direct opposition and probably many of the things you want. So how has that affected how you campaign and how you do politics?
I don't think it has affected the way we do politics. That's the thing. We always do politics in the same way. Yeah. Focused on compassion and science and the goals, you know, what needs to be done, right? That what needs to be done to make to keep this planet livable, to be compassionate towards other beings. But obviously, yeah, we are still figuring out what it will actually mean for policies now that this, what you called Farmers Party, they call themselves Farmers and Citizens Party, but the Citizens Part is, well, we are looking for that Citizens Part in their in their actions, but we'll see. We are also kind of a positive party. We try to at least talk to other politicians and see what they actually think and what they actually want to do, and see if there is an opportunity to work together. Because on paper, this Farmers Party says that they want that it's important for them that farmers have a good future. And then we say, yeah, well, that's what we want too. It's for us. It's also important that farmers have a good future. So let's work on that, but not in advance choosing the way of industrial farming and keeping this dead end road. Mm. Yeah. Because that's like factually, it's a dead end road. In the past 50 years, the amount of farmers has only gone down, but the amount of animals hasn't gone down. So what that means, you get less and less farmers, but bigger farms. And the only one who profit from this is the agricultural industry, like the people that make the multinationals that make the feed for animals. They profit from that. The ones who build the big stalls, how do you say, the big farms,
yeah,
and the banks who profit when farmers have to get big loans from the banks to make their farms bigger and put a lot of filters or whatever not on it. But the farmers themselves profit the less mm. and less from that. Mm. So it's a dead end road for everybody, for animals, people. And so we try to put that across. And I guess that's the most important thing to acknowledge, and our tactic is to show that there is not a lot of discrepancy, not a lot of difference from people living in cities and more on countryside. We always say every person, countryside or city, wants a healthy environment for their children, for themselves. They want some green around them. They want to be healthy living. And so there is no difference in that. But the Farmers Party and some who support the Farmers Party are really trying to make this myth of a division between city and the rest and the country to make that bigger, to make it seem like everything that we do for animal welfare or organic farming or nature, that's something from the city. The city people want that, and the people from the country don't want that. but it's just not the fact. When we look at, for example, in my region, regional parliament has given an has asked the people living in our region what they think is important for the future of our region. And what came out of that is that they thought that taking care of our water problems, we have a lot of water quality problems, etc., is a priority. Taking care of nature is priority, and a healthy environment is priority above all the commercial other stuff they could choose from. They saw those three are things priorities for us. And when the researchers look into, okay, but who says this is a priority for us? What kind of people say that? They found out that it's people from the city and country alike. So it's all the same priority, and it makes sense.
Yeah, because they want the same thing.
Yeah. So we tried to put a finger on that and point to that, like, look, we all want to be saying things, so let's focus on these common solutions. And a system that works for farmers, animals, and our environment as well.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Do you think the Farmers' Party, the Farmers and Citizens Party, has gone so big because it's played off this rural versus city divide, and lots of there must be people supporting it, because I think like maybe 20% of the votes in some areas are quite significant. Is that because they've captured a lot of the rural votes and that's how they've kind of risen up?
Definitely. And not only rural vote, also the city vote. That's why I'm saying it's not really a big division between those. But the success of that party is also because, and they actually said it, we tried to copy the tactics of Party for the Animals. not the tactics of using science, because obviously that would never sure. work for them.
Yeah. Not the truth bit.
Yeah, not the truth bit. Stating what you really think, at least they pretending to do honest politics, and like they have a party leader which is photogenetic, or she's really good with media. She comes across like your average neighbor, talks in normal people language, whatever that means, but like we talk right now, and she's really, she's not like the standard politician. So people really want that kind of politicians that they can identify with. So it's not even about their policies, because I've talked to with a lot of people who voted for that party last time, and they were under the impression that that party wants to abolish industrial farming. I mean, yeah. So it's not about they have read the policies. Yeah, it's just like think, oh, but this person is really nice and she talks so honestly, and you know, it's
interesting. And how do you prioritize which animal-focused policies to push? Is it based on kind of just quick wins right now, still, you know, in terms of history, still relatively new party? Is it about numbers of animals so that you're trying to do the most good with the limited resource that you have, or are there other factors at play here?
I guess it's both, right? So obviously, if you get a chance to do something smaller, which maybe impacts a smaller group of animals, but you will still do it because it's still animals' lives and you want to do that. And you can use that to then make change on other topics as well. We have, for example, animal testing. Testing on animals is a big thing. A lot of animals are used in that business, let's say. So it has a lot of our intention for also the longer term. We just managed to have a breakthrough, the Dutch parliament, who decided on our proposal that we should focus more on investing on alternatives for animal testing and to really phase out animal testing. So it's a good thing, and a lot of animal lives could be saved. And obviously when it comes to farming, it's there has a lot to be won. So we are focusing on that as well.
Mm. And maybe then moving on to like kind of broader political advocacy, I guess this is part of your work, or somewhat through the Animal Politics Foundation. But I guess, do you have a sense of, because I would say the Dutch Party for the Animals is, I would say, fairly left-wing or progressive to what degree, you know, things are very clear-cut. And do you have a view of, if some people say, you know, we should keep animal issues very bipartisan, you know, we shouldn't take sides, we should try to be very, like, engaged with both sides of the political spectrum. Do you think that's true? Or do you think, almost by definition, our issue is quite coded towards some people and we should focus our energy because it's going to be just most effective there? And yeah, what are your thoughts on that whole debate?
Yeah, it's always a debate that comes to the agenda of our meetings with other sister parties as well. What we see naturally is that our sister parties are acting from compassion, right? That's a big value that applies to animals. But I don't see how you can be compassionate towards non-human animals and not being that towards humans. Eventually it doesn't work. Mm. It isn't consistent. It isn't rational. So when you take that into mind, then that translates itself to a lot of other policies as well. But I don't like personally, and the Party for the Animals also doesn't like to work with this left, right, middle. It's just all kinds of old political thinking in which you have to put yourself in one corner. I think the challenges that we have to face right now are unbelievable. It's so big. It's nothing that we have ever seen before. And there, when you say we want different kind of politics, we want different kind of politicians, then you cannot rely on this left, right, middle. It's just all, obviously, maybe some more than the others, but all have contributed towards the different crises of biodiversity and climate and total moral crisis when it comes to animal treatment of animals. They have all contributed to that in one way or another. So I would just like to say to people, don't buy into that left or right. I don't like to call myself any of that. I just say we're not team left or team right. We are just team planet. And that's the focus we have. And whatever others want to call us, that's okay. But the most important thing is that you have this vision. You can base it on compassion and science and keep getting people on board with that. And maybe others, you know, some will disagree, but you don't have to convince everybody, right?
Mm. And do you think that kind of stance is being accepted, particularly maybe by the members or perhaps like younger members of the regions, because of the policies you have within animal rights, but also outside of, so, you know, things like protecting the environment? I saw that there was a piece on trans rights and corporate accountability. So I guess as a kind of collective sense of what you're fighting for, it feels like, just kind of being, as you said, more progressive, more future focused and thinking about the impact of all of these decisions. Is that kind of why you feel like, there's maybe less pressure on you to feel more, to have to identify with a certain side of politics?
Sometimes, especially around election time, we are attacked for not siding with the left or whatever, usually for not siding with the left explicitly, but usually that comes from the left itself, which tries to discredit us in a weird way. But we basically don't pay attention to it. We just make sure that we have a strong vision and it's always consistent, and we try to explain it to our public. And, you know, we are transparent. They can read our standpoints, and they haven't changed a lot in these 20 years. So if people agree, then they agree. If they don't, well, then they don't. We keep that conversation going. That's very important, to keep the conversation going. But we don't really pay a lot of attention of what other people try to push us in. I think that it's a big mistake to go with that flow, to let other people push you into confirming with old politics. That would actually, I think that would lose, then we would lose credibility.
Yeah, makes sense.
Mm. And maybe just thinking more broadly about people who want to go into electoral politics, if that's something people are interested in, what kind of people do you think do really well in electoral politics? And what kind of people do you think, you know, if they have these stress points or triggers, that they shouldn't do it, maybe?
Well, I'm just going to say this from my personal point of view. There is no point. I mean, you could obviously, when there are elections, the party puts out an email on their website. They put out some things you have to match with to be able to be a representative. We have a candidate commission, which then which has talks, you know, like, because basically, like in a normal, when you go apply for an NGO or company, there are talks about if you were suited for the function. But I guess the most important thing is, yeah, that you can handle stress because, you know, especially in the role that we play, not being afraid of telling a story which doesn't conform to the popular opinion at the moment puts a lot of stress on you. And a lot of people, like we just talk about people trying to pressure you to identify yourself over left or right or whatever. But also like really weakening your standpoints because there's people think that's too much or too, you ask a lot. You have to be strong enough to just say, look, guys, we can talk about a lot of things. I understand your point of view, but this and this and this is why we don't agree. So I'm sorry, but this is the way we have to go. And well, if you acknowledge that, which is mostly science, then we can work together on how to reach that point. Because obviously there are different ways to reach that point. So we can talk about that, but we will never let go of that goal, which is, you know, really well built. So yeah, being a strong individual and at the same time also being a good team player, always putting eco above ego. that also means within the team. So not going for your own personal gain. Sure. But always seeing how to work well with a team.
Yeah, that's great. And do you think the international animal advocacy movement should be doing more of this type of work? Obviously, this is a great case study to share of a real success here. Why do you think that's not happening more broadly? And yeah, I guess how can groups be pushing this further?
How can groups be pushing this further? So I work for the Animal Politics Foundation, which is mainly focused on push this movement further. However, we have a very limited capacity. So we wish we would have the money that a lot of corporates have, that maybe the extreme right movement even has here in Europe, at least. It's scary how much money they have. Hmm. If we had that kind of money, how quick the world would change in a positive way. We could do a lot of good things with that. So I would say part of that is because capacity is not on our side at the moment. We are working on changing that, but that only works when people understand why this isn't such an important movement that we cannot forget. So yeah, it's also about people getting engaged and hearing this message and then starting, okay, I want to contribute to this movement. How can I contribute to this movement? Well, you can donate, you can support an animal welfare party or whatever it's called in your country. You can start one, and you can always contact us because we are kind of like the main circle in the networks, which tries to connect these parties together and make sure that not everybody's inventing the wheel again, but that we learn from each other.
Yeah. That's great. We'll also put the link to that in the show notes for anyone interested in reading more.
Mm, definitely. Cool. Well, I think that now slowly going towards, wrapping up with some closing questions. What's a opinion you hold that you think most animal advocates would disagree with?
The opinion I hold with most animal rights. I guess the fact that we have to get into politics, everybody should get into politics. And I'm afraid that most animal rights activists would disagree with that, because they think they have lost faith in politics. They think that other ways are good, and they are right about that. Other ways are good as well. We need fighting for animals on all levels, in society, in the streets, in companies, in your personal life. We need it on all levels. But one crucial level is forgotten, and that's the politics. We need to get animal rights activists into politics, into parliaments, because we now have these industrial farming lobbyists in parliaments. I have colleagues who work for the industrial farming, a lot of them next to me and from other parties. Right. And they are not ashamed to combine those two, which is absurd. Then I'm thinking like, oh, how great would it be and easier for us as well when I would have more animal rights activists sitting next to me in the parliament. We could accomplish so much more. So get into those politics.
Mm. Yeah. That's great. That makes a lot of sense. And is there any piece of news that you're grateful for or kind of excited about recently? Something that you've read or heard of, or something that you're keen to take on yourself and try in your region?
Yeah, well, I heard that in Canada they have banned animal testing on cosmetics, which is a good move for Canada and animals there. So that's something that also helps the fight against animal testing on other parts of the world. And I see that more and more people are getting aware of the fact that we need to change our food system. And that gives me some hope, because in the food system there lies a lot of solutions, not only for animal rights, but also for our nature and the climate. So, you know, you have to stay positive. You have to focus on the positive side. Otherwise, you will get lost in all the drought, drama and depression, and then they will have no energy to act. So please focus on the positives and try to make that bigger.
Mm. Cool. And do you have any recommendations for listeners in terms of books, articles, podcasts you've read that you think have either been great, like personally or politically or in your work, and that you want to share with other people?
There is this book called The End of Animal Farming.
J.C. Rees?
Yeah, I like that. It's also from a positive point of view. Our World in Data, that's not an article, but it's a very nice website in which you can easily check some latest science on agriculture, land use, how it impacts our environment, etc. So Our World in Data it's a good website to keep checking. Funalytics is a good website to keep checking all the developments when it comes to nature and wild animals, everything that has to do with that. Yeah, so those are a couple of them, what I always use a bit to get more information and keep developing as well.
Great.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we're both big fans of both Our World in Data and Faunalytics. We had someone from Faunalytics come on the podcast a few episodes ago, and I think they're great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how can people get more involved in your work? Like you said before, kind of donating, I guess, anyone in the Netherlands becoming a member. But is there anything else that our listeners could do to support you?
Yeah, so if you're in the Netherlands, you can become a member. You can also become a member outside of the Netherlands. But I would say to make it effective, become a member of a party for the animals or whatever it's called in your country, for example, in the UK Animal Welfare Party, because they need your help. They need people, and it's a tough job. So do help them either with donating or with becoming a member or whatever you give. Maybe give them your free time, because every dollar, euro, whatever you have in your country which you donate to such a party, is worth a lot more than if you would invest it in, any other company or any other party that you might have your eyes on. This is such an important movement that we really need. It's been long time neglected in the political democratic arena, and it's such a good project to invest in any kind of way, either with your free time or your money or both. So check out if there is such a party in your country. Make sure you get in contact. Donate at least anything you can. And if you don't have such a party, then see if you can get enough people around you. It could be only a few people to make a plan to start such a party. And if you want to do that, then you can contact us, info@animalpoliticsfoundation.nl. And if you do that, then we can help you guys at least get started and at least connect you with the rest of the movement, which will make it easier for you. Yeah.
That's great.
And of course, to stop eating animals.
Just throw that in. That's really useful. We've put all of the links to everything that we've spoken about in today's episode, websites, email addresses, etc., in the show notes. But for now, just thanks so much for your time, Inez. It's been really interesting. I love a new area that we talk through that I have little knowledge on. I feel like I learn loads from how we can have a real kind of broad and parallel approach to supporting animals. So thanks for coming on and sharing your work, and best of luck with the election towards the end of this year. We'll be watching closely to hopefully see those 10 members getting elected. But just thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure.